they'll just kind of turn their body off. The heart rate slows down, and they just pretty much do the bare minimum to stay alive. And that way they can utilize whatever little fat they have stored up in their body to make it all the way through winter. But the problem now is if we come into a cave during winter. Because if we come back here and disturb these guys, think about it, they're going to have to start coming out of this hibernation. You know, if they have to avoid a predator, maybe they're a problem, they'll have to find somewhere else to go. Think about all the energy it would take just to come out of a hibernation. Think about bringing your body temperature from 57 degrees all the way up to like 98 degrees. That's an enormous amount of energy. Think about when your guys' body temperature fluctuates a few degrees, you know, you get a temperature, you know, you start sweating and it's miserable and there's a lot of energy goes involved in that. Your body temperature drops a few degrees, all of a sudden, you know, you're shivering and you're just using up so much energy. And that's just a few degrees. These guys almost have to double their body temperature. That's a lot of energy that they normally wouldn't have to spend. And just getting back into a hibernation, that's going to take time. All extra energy normally they wouldn't have had to spend. So if you think about it, coming into a cave once or twice could easily take off 1 or 2 months off the total time these bats can hibernate. And if they wake up a month or two early, realize they need to get something to eat, fly out of the cave, what do they find inside?
Nothing.
Nothing. It's still nothing. It's still winter. You know, you got a dead bat. If you come in here a lot more than that, maybe they don't have enough energy to increase that body temperature, increase that heart rate. You just have bats dying on the ceiling, can't come out of the hibernation. You know, each one of these gray bats would leave the cave every night and easily eat 500 mosquito-sized insects every hour while they're active.
Each.
That's a lot of bugs. This cave will actually close down in a couple of weeks. We turn off for the winter, no cave tours, so we can allow these guys to come back and hibernate. With the new cave gate on there, we've restored a lot of the good environment and conditions in the cave for those gray bats, because there's like less than 1% of the caves in Missouri are suitable for gray bats. They're really specific little guys, and when they do have a cave that they can use, we need to preserve it. So we got the cave gate out there, that's great for them. They're slowly coming back. We've had gray bats return. Out of the 300,000, how many think we've had return?
12.
A little more, about 20 to 25 gray bats have returned to this cave, even. No more zeros, all right? So they're an endangered species. They're hurting. Bat identification is one of those fun things. A lot of the bats look the same. The most common ones are eastern pipistrelles. They didn't really look like pipistrelles to me. Pipistrelles are usually pretty easy. They're small guys, and the outside of their wing looks kind of pink or it'll be a light color, so usually they're pretty easy to pick out, but that can vary between individuals. For a lot of the other guys, you kind of have to look at like the hairs on the toes as a good indicator. You look at to see if it's hairy toes and if the hair go all the way to the end of the claw or longer than the claw. Some people look at the ears. The ears look a little bit, and there's just all these little things that you, to truly be able to identify a bat with any good degree of accuracy, you have to have them in your hand and poking at them and making them angry and stuff. And I'm not vaccinated for rabies, so I'm not going to be pulling off any bats for you guys. Sorry. They look to me kind of like little browns. There's actually, the species name is Little Brown.
They only come in the way that we came in?
Yeah, that's the only entrance we have right now, is the way you guys came in. There used to probably be, where that Rimstone Dam would have been an old paleo entrance, that first stop we made would have been an old paleo entrance, that room that had all that broken stuff in it, that probably, it's suspected that actually connected to Indian Cave, a cave just down the Walking Fern Trail, that was an old paleo entrance for Fisher Cave. There's probably an old paleo entrance halfway through that waterfall. There's actually a bear skeleton back there, because they think there had been an old entrance back there, because where he's at, the two ways between them are too small for a bear to get through, and there's one spot back in that room. You can actually crawl up this one way, and you get up, and you only get about 30 feet away from the surface. It actually gets a bit warmer, and I think there was an old sinkhole entrance to the cave there that bear had gotten down into, and during hibernation, that probably filled in. He was stuck in the cave. There's another probably old paleo entrance. If you follow this trail all the way back, two more passageways that lead off. One's called the pit crawl. That's about 750 feet of ceiling height of 2 feet high, if you're lucky. At the end of it is a pit part of the pit crawl, a 45-foot deep bell-shaped pit. But if you cross that pit, all of a sudden you start seeing raccoon claw marks everywhere. And no raccoons making it from over there, up there, and across the pit, and on the other side. So there's probably an old paleo entrance back there, too. What time is it?
Got 15 minutes.
Don't look. And first cave party given in 2 weeks, my timing might be a little off. Why are these black bears coming back here?
Hibernating.
They're hibernating. It's still, you know, a great environment for hibernation. You know, constant temperature, low disturbance, don't even have to dig a den. Just flop down in the clay, good to go for the winter. There's kind of a problem, though. And we can demonstrate the problem really, really easily if you guys would click off your flashlights for me. And if you have a watch or something that glows, you may want to cover it up or turn it off. If your shoes light up when you dance, don't dance.
I'm right here.
You can do all the fun stuff, waving the hand in front of the face. Can't see your hand.
I can't see.
Because if you open and close your eyes, you can't tell the difference.
Cool.
What can that bear see? How's this bear getting through here? How's he navigating? Because it's not really a death trap. We're not walking along, you know, a bear graveyard through these caves. Very rarely are they dying back here. So how are they getting out?
It's weird.
Smell.
It is smell. There might be some memory involved. That one's a little bit harder to... That's debatable. But smell is something... Man, we know bears have a sense of smell that's many times better than even the best bloodhound. And as that bear's walking through this cave, you know, he's rubbing up against the things, and bears are kind of smelly, I imagine. And he's doing stuff along that path that smells. So as that bear has walked through this cave, he's left this scent trail through this cave. And he can follow that scent trail in and out and navigate using that scent trail. So you guys can turn your lights back on. Yeah, we're not getting out of here exactly on time. That happens.
You guys can set off your flashlights and just set them on the clay floor right in front of you.
Thanks for coming. You know, what I really hope you guys get out of this isn't so much a lot of the educational information stuff. We talk about, like, cryptocrystalline quartz and a whole bunch of weird stuff like that. I'm happy as far as education stuff you guys come out with stalactite, stalagmite, column. I consider that good. What I really want you guys to come out with is an appreciation, a respect for these kind of ecosystems, these kind of really cool situations where this stuff is very sensitive. And hopefully now, as you guys go out, you can explore this park. And we got 47 other caves in this park that you're more than welcome to explore. Only a handful of them are gated and permit caves. Everything else is pretty much open. And hopefully now, as you guys do explore this stuff, you know to respect it and appreciate it, and you know to be careful. No, you know, to watch where you step. Don't step on salamanders. Watch. Try not to touch stuff, break stuff, because a lot of this is very sensitive. Enjoy the day. It seems to be a great day. It's not going to rain, I don't think, so. Sure. Have a good one.
Hey. Thanks for letting us see your kid. What is this thing? It's called the outside world.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.